to order.
Of the Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission. So welcome, everybody. Glad to have you here this evening. This is March 4th, 2020. So members, one of the things we have as an action item is to do and approve the minutes, but we need one more person for a quorum. And Representative Hertas has been requested, and Senator Rosen. So we're just hoping that one of them will come and we can take care of this particular item. The next one on our agenda is having member questions on the MMB memo that came out October 1st, 2019 in regards to classified, unofficial, and other kinds of MMB. And actually, I was thinking, since it's been a little bit, maybe Ms. Raytan, if you could summarize again and give us an update at all.
Sure, Madam Chair. So the memo is just laying out the role that we see MMB continuing to play within the executive branch as agencies are responding to fiscal note requests. Our goal with this memo was to find a path where agencies could work with their EBO as they are beginning the work on fiscal notes to discuss the assumptions, particularly on complex fiscal notes or for ideas that haven't been seen before. I think a lot of fiscal notes wouldn't require this early engagement, but it is requesting executive branch agencies engage early with their EBO, so there's some dialogue between the agencies and the executive budget officers as they're putting together their fiscal notes. The goal here is that we prevent MMB from coming around the back end of the fiscal note process and flagging concerns with fiscal notes. I think with the creation of the LBO, that was one thing that we had heard repeatedly of what would MMB do if in the end they disagree with a fiscal note, and what we are trying to do here is to prevent that as much as possible so that we are making sure assumptions and calculations are vetted with the executive budget officers at MMB.
Thank you, Ms. Raytan. I think the concern we have, though, which we've expressed from the beginning, that the Legislative Budget Office is doing that work of coordinating, and the concern we have is that MMB is used to kind of their old role, and things have changed. So the agency's actually been doing fiscal notes for quite a while, so this is not new to them to be able to do fiscal notes. So that's a concern that I have. One of the things also is we received a letter from MMB about collaborating with the LBO. And that adds an especial concern now. You're not aware of that?
I
don't have a copy with me. I just assumed that. Collaborating with the OLA.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
Yep. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Mr. Nobles and saying LBO. So I think the concern we have is that the Mr. Nobles and the Office of the Legislative Auditor is an independent functioning auditing and needs to be kept distinct and separate in regards to that. So when I see that come out about that, and then I have your letter, it's of concern.
And Madam Chair, MMB, as the state's CFO, the commissioner of MMB, we do have a role centrally within the executive branch of having oversight over fiscal management. And I think it's difficult to fully remove ourselves and comment on the backside of the fiscal note process. So EBOs work with their agencies every day on fiscal issues, and so dialoguing about fiscal note responses is not outside of the norm for the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think there's one other thing, and that was the classified unofficial fiscal notes, and Ms. Weber was going to go over that a bit, but a question I have for you is, to date, in regards to classified unofficial fiscal notes, the concept there, very strong, was in place before, but has there been situations where MMB has been involved to date with any classified unofficial fiscal note requests?
Madam Chair, we have requested that agencies share classified fiscal notes with their executive budget officer. We've made it clear that it is private data when it's shared with the executive budget officer, that it retains its status as private data, that it is not shared with anyone other than their executive budget officer, or if it's complex, it could be shared with the supervisor for that executive budget officer if they're working through a complex issue, but it's not shared with myself, it's not shared with our deputy commissioner or our commissioner. So it is retains its status as private data, and I think that's the important part.
Well, I suspect as we continue, by the way, Ms. Weber will give us an overview of the LBO process for classified unofficial fiscal notes, and then also go into the 2019 report. But we may revisit some of these things, but just wanted to put it on that it is a concern. Ms. Weber, can you go ahead and just take your two items? First, the LBO process.
Sure. Madam Chair and members, as a reminder, at the last Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission meeting, I was asked to work with nonpartisan staff in the House and the Senate on the procedure and process that the LBO would employ related to classified unofficial fiscal notes. And the agreed upon process that we began implementing at the start of this year's legislative session was that when a member makes a request to a fiscal analyst for a classified fiscal note, the fiscal analyst will let the member know that the data is classified under Minnesota Chapter 13.64. And if the legislation is at any point in time considered for action by the legislature, whether that be in a committee or on the floor or anything of that nature, that the information then becomes public. They'll also make the member aware that the memo that was issued by MMB instructed agencies to provide, to share that information, and so agencies may be sharing that information. When the LBO receives a classified fiscal note request, what we do in the technology system that manages the fiscal notes is we add a message into the system providing notification of our standards and procedures and the classification of the data under Chapter 13.64. And then once the note is completed, we also put a comment on the note indicating that the data is classified, that if there is certain action taken by the legislature on that language, the fiscal note becomes public at that point in time, and also advising members that it's prudent to consider requesting a regular fiscal note once the language is going to be moving forward, so that any new or updated data can be included in the fiscal note at that point in time. So that was the agreed upon process among the House and Senate staff and the Legislative Budget Office.
Thank you very much, Ms. Weber. And after that, we have the 2019 report. But just before that, would you just talk about to date? Because the LBO as of... Oh, I'm sorry.
I have a question.
Sorry,
I just want to... No, it's okay. I just... If you're not going to move to a different topic.
I'm going to stay on it a little bit, but yes, go right ahead.
Oh, okay. I just had a question. When you were talking about... if certain actions are taken, the fiscal note information becomes public. Are those certain actions defined so that people mm-hmm. know what actions those are exactly, so that, you know, it's, that seems like it should be defined?
Yes, Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, yes, the language is defined in Chapter 13.64 around what would then result in a fiscal note and a classified fiscal note becoming public information. The language is, it could use some improvement, but it indicates that if the legislation under which the fiscal note was based is offered for consideration by the legislature. So that offered for consideration, has been interpreted to be, it's offered in a committee setting, it's offered in the floor, it could be offered either in the form of an introduced bill or an amendment to an existing bill.
And is that defined as all year, whether we're in session or not in session? Is there any differentiation between that? Because sometimes, I mean, we have some meetings that are happening during the interim, but they aren't really, I mean, we're not in session. So is that considered the
Ms.
same?
Ms. Weber? Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, the practice between the House and the Senate is a little bit different. The House can meet in committee outside of the session, but the Senate cannot. So it would depend on which body.
Oh, okay. So in the, if it's in the House, then if they have a hearing, that's considered an official, so that would be offered for consideration, even if it's during interim. But in the Senate, it wouldn't be, or is that?
I'm kind of looking over at Senate Counsel.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Mr. Bottom. I just remember having committee hearings on occasion in the Senate.
I think this microphone is working. Yeah, thank you. So, Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, certainly there are Senate committee hearings during legislative interims. I think the practice has been not to take action on legislation. However, I think for the purposes of the definition that Ms. Weber is talking about, offering an amendment, and it's sometimes done in that style, you know, for consideration by the committee, not necessarily taking action, would be sufficient to meet the language. You know, offered for, I think it's offered for consideration, but I don't have the text in front of me right now.
Okay.
That's
thank you, Mr.
the way
Bottom.
I would read it. I hope that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Bottom. I think the clarity is about just by virtue of having a committee hearing in the interim doesn't mean that everything that's classified unofficial, but it's only when an action is taken to make it public in some way at maybe something official like a committee hearing?
So, Madam Chair, I guess that's what I'm trying to get clarity on. So if a hearing is held and if the if it's a, I guess, just a draft legislation, maybe it hasn't been introduced because it's before session, is that introduction, if it had a fiscal note request, does that become public then at that time?
Yeah. Ms. Weber?
Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, I'll maybe read, I do have the language in front of me on the statute. It says, if the unofficial fiscal note or an updated version is subsequently used for an introduced bill or any legislation, including an amendment or a proposed bill, that any member of the legislature offers for consideration by a legislative committee, the fiscal note becomes public data. So that's, and in circumstances where we're in question, what we have done is we've consulted with counsel from both the House and Senate before making a determination.
Okay.
Senator Wicklund?
No, that's
okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Carlson.
On that question, I'm kind of interested in at what point, and I'll give you a real life example. I have members, oh, that's right. I have members.
Maybe pull your microphone to you.
Who will bring an amendment forward that they may or may not choose to offer, depending upon the discussion in committee. And then copies are made, and they're in the possession either of the chair to be distributed later, or they may, in fact, even be in the packets. But they haven't decided yet, depending on discussion, when they're going to move the amendment, if they will at all. So my question is, from your perspective, if there's a fiscal cost, at what point would you make that available? Because the member may not want to have it available until they make up their mind as to whether they're going to move the amendment or not. So we're talking about a timing issue here. And if they choose not to make the amendment, they may not necessarily want it to go public.
Ms.
That's
Weber?
A real-life example that happens every legislative session more than once.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, in our uniform standards and procedures, one of the provisions around the classified notes is that we will make the information available publicly upon request. So because we don't know of all the activity that may be underway within the various committees, so we may not have an awareness of the amendment. If there wasn't a fiscal note that was done, we may not know that it is actually being considered and could potentially be offered in committee. So because we don't have a systematic way of knowing when the language might meet the criteria under 13.64 of becoming public, we are at this point in time being more on the side of, if somebody were to request, if someone were to say, we have this language, it was offered in committee, was there a fiscal note done on it, then we would review any past classified fiscal notes to see if there was a fiscal note done on the exact language.
Madam Chair,
yes,
if I
Representative
may follow
Carlson.
Up, I'm talking about a situation where there may have been a fiscal note prepared for the benefit of the author or the committee chair, but the member is undecided as to whether to move the amendment, pending the discussion or other amendments perhaps being offered. And so they'll say to the chair, I'll give you a copy of the amendment. I may or may not move the amendment. And we may even have a discussion as to, if the amendment is moved, what it would cost. Because I'm talking about the real world and the last stop with Ways and Means before a bill hits the House floor. So I'm talking about, there's a fiscal note prepared. The author is not sure whether he or she will move the amendment or not. And from your perspective, when does that go public? You've prepared the fiscal note.
Ms. Weber, before you answer, I personally think, Representative Carlson, there's a difference between a bill and a fiscal note. So putting forward some language, and in this case, if it's not introduced, it would be an amendment type of thing, maybe from the reviser or who knows, could be other staff as well. But generally, even after something has been adopted, then it goes out for a fiscal note, at which point that would go on. But I don't know if prior to that, the fiscal note has to be public just because the language itself was introduced in some way.
And Madam Chair, I'm not talking about bills. I'm talking about an amendment, and perhaps some of them are, as we all know, very significant. Mm-hmm. And members are making a determination as the discussion moves forward as to whether they will offer the amendment or not. Mm-hmm. And we've all been in committee hearings where the amendment may come up if it happens to be in the packets. And the member then says, I choose not to offer it, or amendment withdrawn, or whatever. But a fiscal note, hopefully, if it's a significant amendment, has been prepared, and they often are. And so my question of Ms. Weber is, when, from the eyes of her office, is that public? If the amendment is in the packet but hasn't been moved, and you've prepared a fiscal note, does it go public at that point, or does it go public when the member chooses to move the amendment, is essentially the question. And that's what I said at the beginning. That's kind of the real world. You deal with that every once in a while in committee, where members, depending on the outcome of testimony and so on, may or may not choose to move an amendment.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, so with respect to amendments, there are actually three different types of fiscal notes that may be prepared. So a request for an amendment to a introduced bill can be made, and that is not classified as private data because the bill has been introduced and the member has not requested for an unofficial fiscal note on language that has not yet been introduced. Those fiscal notes automatically are distributed to the committee and upon completion by the LBO, and they are also posted to the website 24 hours after. There's also the option of what's called an unofficial fiscal note that is, again, not classified. So someone is contemplating maybe offering legislation. They haven't requested that it be classified. Those fiscal notes also get distributed. We know who the author is. We know who the committee is, the system. Those are data points that are collected in the system when the fiscal analyst makes the request. So the information is distributed that way. When a member has made a request for a classified fiscal note, the only data that the LBO is aware of is who the fiscal analyst is that has made the request. And then we also have a copy of the draft language that gets submitted to us. If later the amendment were offered in committee, that would, and it's the exact language under which the fiscal note was based, that would meet the criteria of then becoming public information under Chapter 13.64. We don't have an automated method by which we know that that action took place. So it would take close communication and collaboration between the original fiscal analyst who maybe worked on the first request and the LBO, or the LBO as we're monitoring and watching what's happening in committees.
Well, and Madam Chair, you're getting to the point that I was with your third example there. Mm-hmm. So it goes public when the member decides to move the amendment. Is that what you just said?
When it's adopted. And this is where I'm kind of looking at, but it's offered for consideration is the language that's in the statute.
I don't want to get tied up with semantics here. Just to clarify, I think you're saying in your third example that it remains private until the author of the amendment chooses to move the amendment, because then the author has gone public. He's mm-hmm. He or she has moved the amendment, and at that point, as the chair of a committee, I might ask the author, do you have a fiscal note, or maybe I've been provided with mm-hmm. the fiscal note. At that point, I think you're saying it becomes public. But it can remain private in the eyes of the author of the amendment until they move the amendment. Because sometimes mm-hmm. members get cautious about whether or not they want to move an amendment and what kinds of circumstances might take place in committee before they make it. And as I said earlier, everybody around the table knows that sometimes the chair has a list of the amendments there, and you might say Representative so-and-so, and they say your amendment is next, or however the chair is handling it, and they say I withdraw the amendment. They've decided that they don't want to move it. Mm-hmm. They probably don't want to go public with it for whatever reasons, mm-hmm. because it was in their mind just preparation in case certain events were to take place. So I think you're saying it's private until that motion takes place, am I correct?
Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Representative
Mr.
Carlson, I don't
next.
Feel that I have the legal expertise to make specifically make that determination about when. I know we've had questions about if the committee posts all of the amendments, is that the point in time where then now it's essentially been made publicly available, the language, for consideration, and might the fiscal note become public at that time? We have to do some more work on this, and I'd like to at some point in the future also consider potentially clarifying this language, because it's been challenging. All
and different committees, Madam Chair, have different procedures.
Yes,
some have an absolute on the House side 24-hour rule mm-hmm. for amendments, and they're posted. Some committees, and I would be one, recommend a 24-hour rule, but I don't embargo an amendment that might come in late. Or I appreciate if a member says I might have an amendment and gives me a heads up, but they're making the decision as to whether to move the amendment or not. And so I'm just trying to solicit from your perspective when you view that as going public. Mm-hmm. And if it's when it's put in the packet, then we would know that. I could share that with the person that plans to make it. I'll say, well, if you've got your amendment included in the packet, or if it's been turned in 24 hours and it's posted, then they would know it's going public. They could make that determination. But if they come in late, I don't embargo amendments. I recommend a 24-hour notice. I guess you want to think about that, but I would like to know from your perspective when you would go public with the fiscal note. I think that's important to potential authors.
I would say, Representative Carlson, just hearing Ms. Weber's comments already, that we need to do some work on that.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, she cannot give us some of the definitive information that we're thinking about. But Mr. Marks would like to make a comment, so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was going to talk about the example that Ms. Weber did, that if an amendment is posted on the committee's website 24 hours in advance or whatever, is that available for consideration? And I think you can make an argument that it is. I think there's another example, and that would be when, if a committee's having an informational hearing on a bill, and then the author hands out an amendment and says, well, I'm not going to move this today, but I'm offering this for you to think about too. Is that available for consideration? So I think there are other circumstances that probably meet the definition of being available for consideration, but certainly aren't being moved or actually acted on at that point yet. And then, as Ms. Weber pointed out, the OBO doesn't know when, or may not know when these things have happened, so it might be somebody else contacting them and saying, this amendment was posted, do you have a fiscal note on it? Or this amendment was handed out in a committee meeting, is there a fiscal note on it?
I would say, though, that language that you have is different than a fiscal note. I just want to throw that in. And I think that if you offer, just because you posted it, when you can withdraw it, then it hasn't truly been offered for consideration. But I think that's the kind of thing we ought to do. What complicates it even more, it's very different in the Senate. It took me a while to get used to that, in that in the Senate, amendments come up without the chair or the president of the Senate or anybody knowing. They might know there's 10 or 5 or 64, but they don't know what they're about or even who's offering them.
And just, Madam Chair, to clarify, I think I'm saying if it's posted, then at that point the author has chosen to go public. But there are times when they may choose to wait before they move their amendment or distribute their amendment, and some committee chairs might say that's out of order, it didn't meet the committee 24-hour rule. Some chairs are open to accepting those amendments, and I would be one of them, where I would say I recommend that you give us a 24-hour notice. And most authors do. You know, I'm talking about that rare situation, however, where they may not know how the discussion is going to go and then would choose to move their amendment. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can even have an oral amendment, but then there wouldn't be a fiscal note generally prepared if that were to be moved.
Could be.
But I'm just trying to clarify when in their eyes, and I respect your point that you need to have some discussion. I just want you to be sensitive to that, because an author may or may not want it to go public. I happen to be very open about my stuff, but not everybody is, depending on the circumstances.
Yeah, when your chair weighs and means, it does make a little difference. That's the good thing.
But I'll drop it at this point, Madam.
I think the main thing it points out the need to do some work about that. So, Ms. Raton.
Madam Chair, my question was just practically, if you're not making them public until someone comes to you and says, do you have a fiscal note on this? And in that situation, they came to you with language that was posted on the website and said, do you have a fiscal note on this? And if you said no, and they requested a fiscal note on it, wouldn't they get the same information?
Ms. Weber, do you understand that question? Okay.
Madam Chair and Ms. Raton, I think what's being conveyed is if a new fiscal note were requested, the result of the original classified fiscal note would likely be the same. I think there are cases in which it might be different. Let's say it was a forecast program and the forecast came up.
Sure.
or things of that nature. So there might be a different result with respect to the fiscal note. But the way our uniform standards and procedures were drafted, because of the uncertainty of when these actions may occur and the ability to treat everything uniformly and consistently, the current standard is that we wait until a request is made to our office. We then look at that language, consult with nonpartisan counsel in the House and Senate, and determine whether or not it's met the criteria of Chapter 13.64.
Okay. Thank you, members. I would say, Ms. Weber, when you probably don't have much free time, especially right now, but at some time, maybe put some of those questions or thoughts down, because I do think we maybe need to do a little more work. And on my list for you would be, there's a difference between language, bill language, and fiscal notes. So introducing an amendment, and especially subject to a lot of discussion sometimes, I think I would like to add that to that kind of consideration. Are they joined, or are they two separate documents? All right, well, great discussion, everybody. I wish the rest of our folks were able to be here and to hear this, but nonetheless, great discussion. And with that, Ms. Weber, I was going to ask you to just give us an update on how things have been going since you're actually officially were in session and all of that. This, I know you have in here a 2019 report, but this is more today.
Yes. Madam Chair and members, thank you. Since we took over responsibility for the oversight of fiscal notes at the beginning of September of last year, we've now received a total of 402 individual requests. And that's resulted in the assignment of 833 individual fiscal notes to agencies. There's a lot of intricacies within that data. Some fiscal note requests later become inactivated, so not all of those result in a completed fiscal note. But just to give you a sense of the scope of the work, over the last week, we have exceeded getting 100 requests in a week. So the volume is getting very intense right now, leading up to the deadlines.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the update. So the next thing is your LBO 2019 report.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. In your packet, you do have a memo from me dated March 4th that provides just a report that was put together on all the activities of the office during calendar year 2019. It does cover a little bit longer time period than that, as I was appointed to this position in September of 2018, so it's reflective of all the activities. I'll just highlight some of the bigger items that the office has accomplished. We entered into an agreement with Minnesota Management and Budget for operational control of the fiscal note tracking system. We also developed and had adopted by this commission uniform standards and procedures. Both of those were required under the enacting legislation that created the Legislative Budget Office. We've created a website and posted information related to the LBO on that website, as well as that is the place where individuals can find completed fiscal notes as well as local impact notes. The staff of the office, we are not fully staffed yet. We did not fill one of the positions, but we have hired 9 analysts and a coordinator and myself, and then we've also hired a part-time temporary person that's working with us over the course of the session. At the conclusion of the session, we're going to reevaluate the staffing to see what would be. Initially, it was anticipated that there would be a deputy director for the office, but I think this first year of having responsibility for the fiscal notes can inform what's the best way to utilize that position that we have still available. We've also developed internal protocols that we're trying to make sure we're as consistent and as possible across all of the analysts in the office when reviewing fiscal notes. We conducted meetings with all of the large agencies to introduce ourselves to them as well as learn about their fiscal note process. This commission has met 8 times, and we secured short-term office space in the basement of the state office building. We also, with respect to the fiscal note tracking system, there were 2 releases that we worked in collaboration with MMB on for the system, both to prepare for the new LBO role with respect to and create a new role for the MMB EBO. We have met with finance chairs, and since the date of this memo, we also have gone and around and met with minority leads of all the finance committees in the Senate and the House. We still have a few to get done over the next couple of weeks, but we've had meet and greets for each of the analysts with their committee chairs and minority leads. And then we published a user guide on fiscal notes that provides a little bit more detail and instruction and examples to users. Created a backup structure within our office in the event we have an analyst who is out. And the staff over the summer leading up to the September 1st timeline, they conducted case studies on fiscal notes from 2019. They also reviewed all of the previous year's fiscal notes that were completed for the agencies in their assignment areas. They conducted a research project on a topic that was expected to come up this legislative session, as well as we held weekly knowledge building sessions where we invited in individuals throughout state government to speak to us about different aspects of the state budget or work that items that impact our work. Our current focus, obviously, is 100% on fiscal notes. We are dedicating all of our time to that right now. As we think about this upcoming summer, we will be doing a post-review of what we learned over this last session and looking at our standards and procedures to see if there's any changes. We're also looking at a long-term strategy related to the fiscal note tracking system and any additional enhancements that we want for that. And we'll plan to do a survey again of all of the stakeholders. Last spring, we conducted a survey to provide input into our standards and procedures, but we'll do a survey to get some feedback from the individuals that we work with and those that are the consumers of fiscal notes to learn about different things that we should be considering to improve the process moving forward. And Madam Chair, I'm happy to take any questions that members might have.
Senator Rosen is on her way, by the
okay.
way. So that'll be good. Thank you very much, Ms. Weber. I just have to say I'm really impressed with all the thoroughness of the work you and your staff have done. But I know you also commented to me there is nothing like doing actual fiscal notes to take you to the whole next level of learning. Mm-hmm. That's certainly the case. The next item on our agenda is having to do with something that I found that in working in this area over the years, this performance review and, you know, annual reports and some of that. But I really felt that an annual report, which is what Ms. Weber just presented, is not the same as a performance review. I had seen Ms. Weber's work that she was doing for performance reviews with her staff, and I asked her if she would come up with a performance review for herself and talk about. I thought she had done so well with her staff, and I thought that would be very appropriate. So she did do that, and what you have in your packet right now is a process piece for annual evaluation for the Legislative Budget Office Director. And so you can take time to read through it. And again, the chair working with the vice chair, I think it's very important that we have a bicameral effort here, and this year we also have bipartisan as well, annual performance. And during this past year, as Ms. Weber put this together, then I worked with Representative Carlson and stepping it up along the way so that he was informed and knew. And then he participated in the performance evaluation and review as well. And then the two of us discussed the results of that and recommendation to the LCC as well. And so that's what you have before you today is the evaluation conducted during the fifth year of the director's six-year appointment must include a recommendation. And so we didn't wait for the fifth year or the six-year appointment. We did one this year, and really felt, Ms. Weber really felt that that would be appropriate to do, especially in her first year, but then it would be the year before your appointment would be up. And so Representative Carlson and I together worked on that and signed off on the recommendations at that point. Representative Carlson, would you like to add some to the process or comments?
No, I think you've covered it well. We were both involved, and we exchanged some emails, and I think we...
Phone calls?
Yeah, phone calls. I think it all worked out quite well, so I don't have much to add.
Okay.
She did a good job.
Yes. That made it easy,
didn't
it? I think
that was the bottom line with the evaluation.
Right.
We were both pleased with her performance.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about how we could expect more or do anything more, and just really felt that it was really met the level, exceeded our expectations, so we're very happy about that. And so in this particular case, Senator Rosen, we're very happy that you are here because you have providing us the quorum for our vote for you. If you'd like, you can just, your spot is right there. And just to recap a little bit, if you go to the, is there a tab or?
It's just in the front packet. The folder.
It's in the packet of your folder. There is a Legislative Budget Office Oversight
packet.
Commission,
yeah.
And it's a performance evaluation policy. Mm-hmm. It'll probably be at the end, I would say. I think that next one there is, okay, it looks like it anyway. So we went over this just verbally, more the process, the actual document in front of us right now as well. The purpose of the evaluation is to review the work of the director and the overall performance. And a copy of the completed evaluation must be provided to the LBO director and filed with the director of the LCC. So we really function on process, and also that it would be a performance evaluation, not just a report of what was done over the last year. Those are two different things. I'm just trying to talk enough to give you time to speed read through this. If you notice, I really felt that some of the items here, overall management of the office and staff, nonpartisanship and independence, execution of the core function and responsibilities, internal and external leadership, collaboration, communication, individual and office performance goals, conflict management. Those are all very, very important. The evaluation must include an in-person meeting between the chair and the LBO director to discuss the work. And this is also done in consultation with the vice chair. And this process is what Representative Carlson and I went through, both in the developing of the process and then following it through to its conclusion. And I really appreciate Representative Carlson prompt responding to my emails. We had interstate phone calls.
I was in Kentucky.
I was in Florida, so.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, well.
A little side conversation.
Yes, it was. It wasn't that way, but I had set up the call, and so we were able to do that, and really appreciated your making yourself available, so that worked out well. And that is the process we went through, as well as that result. But what I wanted to do, though, was to establish this as a policy of our Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission that this would be voted on, and then in the future for any evaluations. We have an established process, and that we had already followed, but an established process for the future. Representative Carlson, would you like to make a motion to adopt?
I'll move that we adopt the report. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Motion has been made. Do we have a second? Senator Rosen. Okay, motion made and seconded. Any more discussion? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails and is adopted. Thank you very much, everybody. Appreciate that. And also, we're going to go back to the minutes. We deferred them. We have three sets of minutes. All three sets of minutes are on the table. Is there a need to act upon them individually, or can we do them as a group? I think if there's no objection, corrections, or additions or anything, then we could vote on them as a group. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move adoption of the August 23rd, 2019 Oversight Commission minutes, October 8th of 2019, and December 16th of 2019.
And a second. Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Thank you very much. With the motion made and seconded, those three sets of minutes, as stated, will be voted on. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. It's very nice, members, to be able to clean the deck in regards to those. The next item is just potential future meeting dates and topics. The thought was now that we are past our process, but maybe for a while, this will take care of the first quarter, maybe the second quarter could be later on, but we've had a challenge getting quorum, and we need at least five for a quorum. Nonetheless, I don't anticipate at this time, other than what we discussed, for Senator Rosen's sake, we discussed the Chapter 13 needing to add some clarity in regards to classified unofficial fiscal notes. Right now, there's a little bit of uncertainty. So probably in the next meeting, Ms. Weber will prepare some materials, some drafts for us to take a look at, which would be, which could be both sometimes procedures of the commission, or it could be legislative changes, which Ms. Weber thought we may need. And so, Ms. Weber, if you could do that, and at the next meeting, it'd be really, really good if we could have all members so that we have a really full and robust discussion about that. That's kind of one of those areas that's beyond minutes and some other things. But you will be in contact with you, but that would be second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. I'm certainly open, members, to the need. We can't get done the some of the material we talked about now before the end of session anyway. I think it would be too much for us to do at this point. But maybe to get it ready for next session. So other than that, I don't know if there's a great urgency at this point. If there would be, we can always call a meeting. Anybody would like to comment? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One potential topic might be the review process that you're doing on fiscal notes, since we've never really seen anything like that before. In other words, it sounds like there was a lot of work done to look over past mm-hmm. fiscal notes to see how they actually turned out, and just to see that process. Mm-hmm. And I think it just continues to build confidence that not only are we getting good fiscal notes, but we are also seeing where maybe, who knows, maybe there were some shortfalls or something else that at least the process that's being used there, so that we're in a continuous improvement.
I think there's a lot of validity to that, Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Representative Vogel, I do want to delineate the difference between the activity that we engaged in over this last summer, which was just reading through previous fiscal notes, talking with agencies, fiscal analysts, MMB executive budget officers, to learn about some of the intricacies that went into it. One of the activities that we do want to do in the future is, after legislation has been implemented for which there was a fiscal note, take a look at what was the cost or savings, what was the fiscal effect of that legislation. So we have not yet started that second aspect yet.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. I think the project for the future, I think that's a good item. I would also say that there's been some discussion about, like even constitutional amendments that always do a $2,000 or do something that for a long time. There comes at some point at which do we set a standard for fiscal notes that says, in certain cases, do we really need a fiscal note, or is there a standard amount or something like that? That might also reduce some of the numbers of fiscal notes sometimes. If we establish some of that, there was some discussion of that. That could be a topic. Okay. Yes.
I remember a conversation we had, you and I, and you were looking at one of the fiscal notes, and I can't remember, it was at the bottom, and it was about, we need to talk about this at the LBO meeting. Have you talked about that?
I'm not sure what it is yet.
About adding something on to the fiscal note, some information.
Oh, I know what that was, yes. Now I remember that. I would say that at the questions that have come up in committee hearings where we've had fiscal notes, there's a note on the bottom that simply states that the LBO person has read it in the usual language for reasonableness, so on and so forth, in a very standard language. There were some questions from the committee in regards to, was there discussion back and forth? Did you have this kind of discussion? Did you do that? And I would say, because now it's a legislative budget office, there's a little bit more interest in that. And I think that the question was, should there be at least a statement of information that there was a discussion about a particular area and that there was that conversation going on back and forth? Because if there isn't a statement like that, we kind of don't know if they just got it, reviewed it, sent it to us. As I know you've mentioned, Ms. Raitan, before, there was feedback from the EVOs to it. And I think the thought was to have maybe a little something in that box other than what was there. The question is, how should that be? We're just being very careful and cautious about that. Mr. Nobles.
You were, thank you, what you were just getting at, and that is, has there ever been any consideration of the legislative budget office testifying about what went on in that engagement with the agency on questioning assumptions? I've never seen that happen, frankly, with EBOs, and it's kind of surprised me in a way that there's never really kind of a committee public discussion about what went on in the dynamics between people. Mm-hmm. Mr. Marks is looking at me like, you don't want to get into that. And but I know that there are discussions where members, I mean, this is why we created this office, where mm-hmm. they think the assumptions were wrong, or, you know, there's a lot of talk about differences of opinion that go on in private. Should there ever be public discussion? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a question for anybody, but Ms. Weber, I mean, would that make you and your staff feel uncomfortable? And did it ever happen? I don't ever remember it happening, Ms. Raitan.
Ms. Raitan, you want to go first?
Sure. Madam Chair and Mr. Nobles, I think it happened on very rare occasions where we were having difficulty signing off on a note. There were some times when those conversations publicly happened in committee where MMB was waiting to sign off until the note reflected something that we felt like we could say it was a reasonable estimate. The other party that I think is often a part of those conversations is fiscal staff, which is maybe why Mr. Marks was making the face he was making, because fiscal staff can see notes when they're in their preliminary status. And we would often, when MMB was running the process, reach out to fiscal staff if we had questions and thought maybe this doesn't look quite right to us. We'd reach out to fiscal staff and say, do you agree with us? Do you think we should push back on some of the assumptions here? Does this reflect what the author was intending? And so oftentimes when we were pushing back, it would be MMB with fiscal staff and the agency. So it's often, at least in the old construct, it was often the three parties.
Ms. Weber, do you want to comment? Representative Carlson?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Madam Chair and Mr. Nobles, I've been asked that question before about whether or not we would be willing to speak in committee, and we are happy to, if we have signed off on a fiscal note based on the information that's available to us, we believe that it's as accurate as it can be and that it's reasonable and that it's in compliance with our standards and procedures. One of the pieces that I will admit that I'm concerned about with the transparency about the interaction that occurs between the LBO and the agencies who are responding to the fiscal notes is that oftentimes our conversations have resulted in the agencies making changes to their fiscal notes. And I feel like that's a bit of a confidential conversation. In statute, it's not confidential. It takes some trust and some relationship and a collaborative working relationship. And that by overtly on every fiscal note indicating what that back and forth might have been could compromise the relationship and cooperation between the agencies and the LBO.
Thank you. I think that's a very important point, I guess, to my question. And that is, you could be put in a position of having to reveal things that were stated implicitly or explicitly in confidence.
I was just going to say that, on the House side, the fiscal notes are in the packet. That my earlier discussion was kind of a rare situation, but an important one. But members will typically, if there's something in that fiscal note that they are interested in or ask about, so there are conversations that do often take place once the fiscal note is distributed. If there's something they want clarification on or whatever, frequently we might turn to Mr. Marks to clarify something in a fiscal note, or the author may clarify it. I was trying to think the other day, I think we had somebody that had a bill up in Ways and Means that was challenging some of the assumptions. Do you remember? I'm trying to think. But at any rate, there are discussions, but there's not necessarily a hearing on a fiscal note in the same way, if that's what you were asking, that we would have on the bill. But it is distributed and it's part of the discussion. More frequently, I think, and I'll use myself as an example, more than once through the years I've had conversations once I've seen a fiscal note, I thought that there was something that was wrong with the assumptions. Probably more frequently when I chaired the Education Committee and would get a fiscal note back and would talk to the commissioner or someone in the department and say, now, where did you get the idea for that assumption? So you're right, those conversations usually take place privately, and sometimes there's adjustments. I know I've had conversations with Mr. Marks, and we've sent fiscal notes back for an update, where we spot something that just doesn't seem to fit. So I just want to point out that it's not a complete void. They are looked at, they're talked about, depending on the questions members might have in committee, or the author when they see it and they see that the assumptions in the eyes of the author aren't necessarily correct. And sometimes that results in changes in the bill, where the author might not be aware of something that was important in the eyes of the people that were drafting the note, and then there's conversations there, and that's where sometimes an amendment comes about. So it's not a complete void, but I don't know that we've ever had a hearing on a note per se, if that's what you're asking.
I would say, Representative Carlson, and we have Senator Rosen here, who is chair of the Finance Committee, I would say that I probably feel a little more open these days in general to talk to the fiscal analyst. And generally speaking, I think the approach was to go through your fiscal analyst and have the fiscal analyst talk to the legislative budget officer. But I think we should feel much more free as chief authors to have that discussion. I think there's kind of been a this is it, take it or leave it. And I think many times, especially prior to this legislative budget office, that was much more my sense. And maybe those like you, Representative Carlson, have a little bit more experience with that, as I am gaining as well, to do that a little bit more, that we can feel free to do that. That was one of the things that I had brought up before, how important the assumptions are. and that the assumptions really should be delivered to the chief author to be sure that their intention in drafting language sometimes unwittingly drives a fiscal note, which they never intended. But somehow the language got written in such a way. So my concern always been, before the agency goes through a tremendous amount of work and the LBO, can't you check with the chief author to be sure that some of these assumptions are going in the direction? Because so many times I've heard before, you get a fiscal note, not just for me, and you're like, how did they ever come to that assumption? What is it in the language that did that? And I think that chief authors should be able to have a conversation, especially with their fiscal analyst, and also have that interaction going on a lot more. That is where also the timing of the fiscal notes coming to us with enough time for chairs of committees and chief authors to be able to do that. But if you read an assumption and it's 2 days before the committee hearing, what's that going to do to the schedule, the committee schedule? Are they going to have to go back and do it? That seems to be at the end when the whole part of the bill started with the chief author. So that's always the push and pull. Some things are so rather clear that that isn't so difficult.
Madam Chair, I was just going to say that, you know, we're talking about the fiscal note, which is our role here, but part of what drives some of that is a conversation that the author has to have with the revisor's office. And I found them very good, you know, when they're drafting a bill to contact me to make sure that they're heading in the direction as a potential author or the author. But that's part of the equation here, because if you don't have a good conversation with the revisor's office in terms of what you desire in a bill, then that in turn is going to drive the fiscal note. And that's where you can get some surprises as well, you know, mm-hmm. because if it's not drafted the way the author intends, you're going to get an answer that you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that the fiscal note's inaccurate, it's just because you didn't yes. have that conversation right. in a way that clarified what your desires were in a given piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. And the revisor's office is very good.
Yes.
You know, if I send them an email and they want to find out more what my intent is, if things haven't been clear, they're very good at getting back and having that conversation. But that is part of the equation.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Final thought before we adjourn. I just wanted to make mention that the executive budget officers used to talk to fiscal analysts who worked with chief authors. I think the difference now is the executive budget officers don't do that. They don't generally have that conversation with fiscal analysts who work with chief authors. Can I clarify that? I see puzzling, so maybe I've misunderstood. Ms. Raton, did I say something that wasn't clear?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I guess I'm not following. Are you saying budget officers don't talk with fiscal analysts? They still have a good working relationship, so I'm not understanding.
No, it's not what I meant.
Okay.
No, this is in the development of the fiscal note. Before, there was, it certainly seemed to me, it was my representation that the executive budget officers, the EBOs, because of the coordinating of fiscal notes,
mm-hmm.
that relationship was MMB
mm-hmm.
in doing that. Now that coordination happens with the legislative budget office.
And Madam Chair, I think, and this is what we've talked about with the ongoing role that the MMB budget officers have within the executive branch. I think there's been a lot of dialogue between executive budget officers, the LBO, and fiscal staff this session.
Okay. All right. I'm glad I got that clarified. Thank you very much. So, members, with that, we are adjourned.
Time for supper.
Yes.
About half hour.
Oh, members, my mistake, members. Senator Rosen, Mr. Nobles, my apologies. I had promised Mr. Heller 2 minutes at the end of the meeting. I didn't write myself a note. Could we just do the courtesy of Mr. Heller having 2 minutes? Mr. Heller, come on up. Go ahead, Mr. Heller.
My name is Rick Heller, an official representative. I want to emphasize this again. The minutes do not reflect this. I unofficially represent the twice exceptional and people with print disabilities. I gave a handout to Ms. Rosen when she came in to ask the minutes to be correct, and I would like to see the minutes reflect what's on the tape. You do have who I might represent, not exactly, but not even my civic engagement part regarding the why I come. I think it's very relevant when we have sign-ins and people sign their names and the issues and who they might represent, as the Senate does in the House, that your committee will be run that way, and hopefully your sign-in sheet will reflect that in the future. Regarding those 2 minutes, it's up to the discretion of the chair of this group to consider what I gave to Ms. Rosen. Since this group is about efficiency, accuracy, and clarity, I would like to see the minutes reflect that. And it's including compliance with web content accessibility guidelines when it comes to the LBO website. There was a bill that was passed. Kiffmeyer was on the 1727 with Tori Westrom, and Mr. Nelson was on the 1962 bill. However, they moved the bill out in special session, defunded, and moved the working group out 2 years. Frankly, it's my understanding, I'm trying to understand the user guide. This is found in December 16, 2019 minutes. I'm not quite sure if that's a uniform standard and procedures. I spoke to Ms. Timmons 2 weeks ago about digital accessibility rates to the national. She thought she was going to bring it up. I think Minnesota could set a precedent in applying digital accessibility, not only relates to this meeting, but in the future for the legislature and the public at large. It is critically important that people have appropriate access based on whatever type of sensories issues they may have. Regarding your report on the fiscal note uniform standard procedures, it mentions administrative impact and technology costs on pages 41 and 45. It's silent on digital accessibility. I suggest that when you look at the responsibilities of agency's chief business technology officers, the CBTO, that they have fiscal notes with an IT impact. Specifically, the 700 Club failed. Mr. Rogers from the Department of Transportation has to have state departments how to make stuff accessible to people with disabilities based on the governor's proclamation, or as I say, executive order, that gets 7% of people with disabilities. It's failing. It needs this impact. When I look at fiscal notes, I never see myself, I never review, I never notice that there's fiscal notes on IT impact, and this includes training. Consider plugging that into this process, and I do again appreciate your time to come to speak at this meeting and provide my civic engagement, and I have open any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Mr. Heller.